bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Photo Show from the British Tech Network. We're here to discuss all the photographic news of the week, as well as answer a few of your questions, the viewers. I can hear someone laughing.
No, I wouldn't dream of it.
You go to the back of the class.
Sorry, sir.
Right. Joining me this week, as usual, our three musketeers of the photo world.
Can I be Porthos? He's the fat one that's always drunk.
You have the build, yes.
Exactly.
First up, we have Mr. Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. How are you doing, Chris?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good.
On a dodgy Comcast link.
Oh, let's not.
Is there anything else?
I don't want to curse on the podcast, so let's not talk about Comcast.
Well, not this early, anyway.
Don't say the C word.
Below him, we have Mr. Ewan Rankin. How are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. I'm all right. Not too bad. Doing all right. I've had a busy week this week, and I got in late last night, but we did Big Show, and I've got it posted already. I'm on a roll, mate. I might actually make some money this year.
Are you saying you're organised if you've got it posted already?
It's all posted, audio and video, and it was all compressed and done and everything. And I'm hoping, here's the thing, because I've got to go down to the photo walk tomorrow. Let's not forget the photo walk tomorrow. But we'll talk about that in a sec. I'm going to hope to try and post photo before Mac starts. Mm-hmm. Which, based on the fact it's 2:15 and we only just started, is probably not going to happen. So.
No, maybe not. And finally, rounding out our panel, we have Alex G. Fox. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Rounding out. Is that a reference?
Round being spot? The obvious word.
Well, you can drink enough beer, you'll be round eventually.
I'm trying. I'll do my best. I'm good, thank you. What was the question?
We haven't started those yet.
No. Okay, so let's get on with the news. Apparent biggest probably news of the week is Adobe releases the public beta for the CS6. Sorry. There. Anyone had a chance to look at this yet?
Six?
The SEX. Is it sexy?
CS6.
Adobe.
Stop picking on me already. We've got a long way to go. Has anyone had a play yet?
No. It only came out this morning, but...
I downloaded it yesterday.
And?
It only took me about 5 tries.
Ouch.
I'm pissed.
Do we know what's in this release? I mean, I was heard something the other day about patch awareness, not only content fill awareness now, but you can select a certain section to be patched in, which I think Alex was talking to me about a little while ago as something he really looked forward to having in a package.
There's a lot I like in a package, but that's just one of them. Patch aware, content aware patching is real. There's a couple of good things that they've updated, most of which I've got to admit are just mine. I've looked through it and I was going to download it and play with it, but when I downloaded, I think it was CS5 and I was using CS4, I had all sorts of trouble getting rid of it before I was ready to buy it, and it really messed up, and I actually had to get rid of CS4 and reinstall it because it messed up my system so much. So I'm not going to download this, not on this Mac. I might do it on another Mac that hasn't got anything on it. But apart from that, content aware patching is really, really handy. A good example, you sent me a picture yesterday that I said I'd play around with and just fix up a little bit to just make it more interesting.
I did.
And one of the things that was in the bottom corner of the picture was some really ugly rooftops and various bits, and I wanted to extend the picture along. So I did the first thing I did is I extended the canvas and did a content aware delete of the empty space. But what that did, that patched in loads of extra horrible rooftops and various other things that I didn't want. But with this new one, what I could have done is selected the area I wanted to delete and also selected the target area that I wanted to patch from. And that would have saved me so much trouble not having to then re-delete all the stuff that I didn't want in the first place. So for that sort of scenario, it's perfect. E.g., if you want to extend a sky, then you delete the area that would be the sky, and then you select another area which is sky and let it work out like that. That would be a real time saving. It's not doing anything that you can't do a long-winded way. There's nothing in this new update that you can't do in a longer winded way. There's nothing new as such. But that is a nice new tool that if you use Content Aware Delete, you will find that this is a really big bonus. That's my main thought on that anyway.
Ewan, have you had a play?
I've read the specs on it, and I haven't had time to get it down this morning, just getting the Daily Show out and then doing the big show and so on. But, I mean, the one thing that I've read in the press release and in the specs that I've read today is that it seems to be content aware akimbo. That seems to be where the focus has come from. They're talking 26% increase in functionality, which I don't know how you measure that, but, you know, things like content aware move, content aware selection, deletes, patching, as you said there. It seems to be that they've got this idea of creating an algorithm of content aware blur, as well as another one that's quite interesting, where they've got this algorithm of creating a very clear outline of what it is that they're actually supposed to be working with and then doing other effects around it. So it's kind of like an extension on from the content aware delete, because that was all about the selection and reproduction of. The question for me is going to be how well it does the edge reproduction. That's where the real test is going to come, because most of the selection tools that you've got, you know, extract tool and magic wand and the magnetic selection tool and those kind of things, they do a pretty good job to get you a basic outline, but I always find myself going back in with the eraser tool to get a more natural edge to each of the things. You know, feather it slightly to get a better edge to stuff when I cut it out. For this thing to be a one-click stop for content-aware edge selection or object selection, I find that a bit of a leap, but I'll bow to those that have played, because I haven't yet.
Mm. Chris, is there anything you're looking forward to in this when you get to have a play?
I'm still using CS3, so I feel like CS6 is going to be a revelation for me. Because there's been so many new things in the interim. But there's a lot of little things, like some, you know, things doing things with like text handling. There's a lot of little things as far as like you can snap like vector shapes and things to pixel boundaries. So if you're doing, you know, UI work or web design stuff, you know, you can get sharper results that way. I mean, it seems to me like there's a lot, you know, obviously the content aware fill and some other things are kind of flashy, but I think for me, it's a lot of the little things. Although I'm mostly worried about getting used to the user interface, because I know it's changed a lot since CS3.
I think it's changed a lot since CS5. I mean, from what I've heard this morning from a few people on tweets, they're saying, you know, the Mac edition is probably one of the least Mac-looking UIs that they've ever come across. So there's probably going to be a bit of a leap for all of us in that.
I think it looks more like the Elements.
Mm.
I mean, I looked at that. I mean, I've been looking at it quite closely. And one of the things I like about Photoshop is the fact that you working with Windows on your desktop at all times. So whatever else is on the desktop is underneath. And it's up to you whether you want to obliterate everything behind. But Photoshop, you get a bar across the top, across the side, and across the right, and your pictures sit within boxes inside. So if you want to keep it sitting on top of your desktop rather than taking over the whole of your desktop, you can still work around it. But with this one, it seems to be there's always been the option to literally hide everything and have a plain background which you work upon. But this seems to take that away, or the default of this seems to be everything is taken away and it takes over your entire desktop. And if you want to reverse that, you can. But most people just go by the default. I mean, that's another thing people don't realize about Photoshop. You can set up Photoshop in any way you want. There's a million different ways. And then you've got setups that are built in, but you've also got, you can save your own setups. And that's something most people don't realize, which is one of the best functionalities of Photoshop. I've got various ones that if I'm working on photos, I click my photo setup. If I'm working on graphic, I click my graphics, and what it does, it opens up and it sets my tabs for separate tools that I do and don't use for various things. And this is supposed to make that a bit easier. I think this is more of a drag and drop rather than a build and save. So that, I mean, that's another positive thing. They never go backwards with Photoshop. There's a couple of things I'd like them to have combined the puppet warp with a warping shape, which I'd like, it's a bit technical, but what Puppet Walk does, it gives you sort of infinite ability to bend and maneuver parts of a picture. I'd like to be able to draw, if you like, a path line and then get the Puppet Walk to snap that straight, for instance. Say I'm working on a piece of paper that's slightly curved. I'd like to be able to Puppet Walk that, draw a line along the curve and then tell it to straighten out that curve and do all the mathematics for me. There's things like that that I know some third-party developer will bring out, and I know Adobe have got the ability to do it, but they just still haven't done it, which is a bit of a disappointment.
I mean, it's one of the things here, the price point as well, though. I mean, you're talking about that, you know, a Photoshop never goes backwards. It always goes forwards. I grant you, I agree totally with that. But it's, you know, if you see it as a stepping stone to the next edition, you know, the price that you're going to get charged for that, they're talking $700 for an upgrade.
Yeah, but I mean, they do, I think, I mean, they work on the principle that, you know, the vast, vast, vast majority that use Photoshop are a business user. And if you think about how often does it come out, once a year, once every 18 months?
Like 18 months, yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about, what's that, £500? I wish I could get away with spending only £500 on every 18 months on something else to do with my business.
See,
it seems a lot of money, but for a business user, it's a lot less than I pay for stationery.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a point. I remember talking to a guy when I was 20 years old, and he was older than I was, and he said, "I bought some new shoes. They're 100 quid. I bought a shirt. It was 20 quid." And we're going back 25 years, and I was like, "Wow, no one's ever seen me spending 100 quid on a shirt." And yeah, I have spent 100 quid on a shirt, but it was 20 years later, to be fair. And with things like Photoshop, I look at the things that I want to do in the current iteration of Photoshop that I've got, and then I'm starting to say, well, do I really want to chuck $600, $700 at this to then upgrade to content-aware Move? Is it really going to save me £700 worth of time, $700 worth of time? And actually, no, it's not, because to get a rugby ball and move it closer to a kicker for the Tamworth Herald, or to get a piece of conveyor and move it 4 or 5 feet to the left and select the outline of it, no, it doesn't. That isn't going to save me £700 worth of time in the course of a year. They're asking an awful lot for functionality that's not a much of an increase. And you will know as well as I do that 90% of what you do is Photoshop 6. I mean, it's,
oh yeah. No, I don't disagree. But you're looking at someone like Chris is the perfect example in every way, not just Photoshop, obviously. But he's going from 3 to 6. There's a big enough jump for him to warrant
a mortgage.
Yeah, no, but there is a big enough jump.
No, but Chris, this is the exact point. Chris cannot go from 3 to 6. Chris has got to go through 5, 5.5, and 6. He will get the upgrade from 3 to 5 without a problem, but 5, he's got to go to 5.5, and 5.5 will then let him go to 6, or he's a new purchase. And I get that a little bit. I've got some sympathy because there's a developmental process within that, but the amount of things that Photoshop does in relation to other programs for photo manipulation doesn't warrant the cost in my estimation. I bought my last iteration when I was a student, and I won't be going up to 6. It just doesn't do enough different for me. I've got the tricks in the bag. I've got the presets available to me. And when it comes down to it, levels, dodge, burn. That's it.
Sure. But as I said, there is nothing I've seen in there that you can't do anyway. It's just an easier way of doing it.
I mean, yeah, Chris, you're the one's going to be throwing out the books for this. Are you really going to go from 3 to 6 and the cost that it takes?
Well, I think what I sat down and figured out, because the upgrade, I can upgrade from 3 to 5.5. It's $950, which is also the same as paying 19 months of the Adobe Cloud thing that starts later this quarter, where it's $50 a month, and I can get whatever Creative Suite software I want whenever I want it. Mm. And that's actually, I think it's a better solution for me, number one, because I don't have $1,000. Usually I don't have $1,000 handy to just drop on software. But what I do have is $50 a month that I could probably put towards it. And either way, it's going to be a write-off on my taxes, right? I mean, it's effectively a business cost. So it's more affordable for me to just pay $50 at a time than to pay $1,000 at once. And there's going to be CS7 in 18 months anyway, which I'll get access to again for free because I'm already paying the $50 a month.
Russ in the chat room has said there is Adobe offers up for upgrades of CS3 users, and then he's put a link in.
And CS4, yeah.
Mm. So you might be okay in with that upgrade price.
Apparently, it's saying it's not formally gone back on its policies, but it's an informal offer valid until December 31st on CS3 and CS4 users only.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I'm certainly going to have a download and a play anyway while it's in beta, because it's not costing me anything.
And then you got to try and get it off your machine.
Oh,
yeah, that's going to be a trick.
Yeah, throw it out the window. It's so much quicker than trying to uninstall it.
Okay, any regular listeners to this podcast will know that we love to hear when the police harass photographers in the city. But this week, we have a slightly different story. Someone has actually received some money from the police because they got harassed by the said police. Simona Bonomo was approached by two PCSO officers, which... are not fully fledged police officers in London. They're sort of support officers, and asked why she was filming buildings iconic to us, as they said, and they demanded to see her images. When she refused, she was later approached by a third officer and told her if she had been aggressive and was then bundled to the ground and arrested. She decided to take legal action against the police, but the case was settled by the police out of court before it was ever heard. It's also raised some concerns about how the police investigated the incident, i.e. they didn't seem to even bother investigating it. But again, it just goes to prove what you've been saying all along, Ewan. As long as you just do what, you know, take a public place, taking photos of public buildings, it's fine. The law seems to know that. The police don't seem to.
Well, to be fair, she's been arrested by part-time officers. The community support people who've got no more power of arrest than you or I have, to be honest. I mean, they're just a walking high-vis vest to most all intents and purposes. But they would have called an officer, and the officer would have decided to take person in. But this happened a while ago. It's 2009, so I think that the police, you know, there's been a no end of stuff taken on since then. It's the fact that she's actually got paid out. She was told to pay an £80. Fixed penalty charge, which I can't see that terrorism carries a fixed penalty these days.
Everything in London carries a fixed penalty.
I thought it was life, let alone 80. If it's only 80 quid, I might take it up. That's a joke, by the way, for anyone that's going to... The photo joke trial that's coming up next year with me. I'm sick of it. It's such a crap. I mean, I'm going to walk around tomorrow and I'm going to try and film a police officer and see what happens. I've got it in me today.
And this happened in Paddington, where we like to go and...
Drink,
basically.
Not photo.
No.
And we know the pub that we're drinking in Paddington, we know the landlady, so she wouldn't stop us filming anyway. So
that's true. Anything to say on this, Alex?
Yeah, it's just, no, I won't be rude. What a shame. I'm glad the girl got paid out, but I'm actually starting to get a bit annoyed that, you know, at a time where, you know, we're supposed to all be doing with these cutbacks and things like that, if some people actually learnt their jobs properly, we wouldn't have to be paying out.
Mm.
You know, it's just another annoyance.
Yeah, sorry. It's not the police money either, it's our money. I mean, it's the taxpayers'
money. And that's the point. I mean, that it happens often enough that there can't be a police officer out there that hasn't been sat down at some point. I'm sure at some point during the week when they're eating their, what do they buy, donuts. I'm not sure what they eat, but I'm sure they're sat down while they're eating their donuts and they're told, look, you know, stop hassling photographers, they're allowed to take pictures. It's something that, you know, in the old days it used to be me, Ewan, and a couple of other people that used to get hassled because we had cameras. Now me and Ewan are probably the only people that don't walk around with cameras. So I think because of the vast, vast majority of people that are out there taking pictures of everything, I imagine the police have actually been told once and for all what the rules are. It would be nice if they try to obey them, just occasionally.
It's nice to see that the chat room is having a whip round for my bail money. So far, we're up to 15 quid, which I think is not going to quite cover it. So next week's show may be coming from
It'll cover a few rounds in the pub, though. Well, for me.
Well, yeah, you can always go out and say, look, we'll get the money. Wait till the trial. You'll get the bail money back because I'll actually show up. And then you can go out and you could buy 3 beers with that, couldn't you, in London? Maybe. $25, Chris, for 3 beers in London. Mm. Think of that. Think of that, mate, before you complain next time.
Okay. Have you anything to add, Chris, to this before we move on?
No, I guess I'm glad that I usually don't have to deal with this problem here. From what I hear from you guys, it sounds like this problem happens a lot more often in Britain than it does here in the States. So I thank my lucky stars.
This is in the chat room. She thinks she's getting a curry in that as well for 15 quid. Lost the value of money, girl. Not a chance.
It's not London. It's not Birmingham prices, you know. It's London.
3 beers, yes. You wouldn't have enough change for a pint of milk.
No.
15 quid.
Moving on. Facebook, one of my popular choices. They've done a fresh update how they displayed their photos recently, and now they're giving us even bigger, higher resolution images. This is following a Facebook engineer called Ryan Mack being dissatisfied of how he saw his shot of the Sydney Opera House displayed on Facebook. I mean, he could have spoken to virtually any other Facebook user and he could have said, no, your picture's not up to snuff. But now apparently they've now done something. And you can click a little button and your image will fill the screen as long as it's a HD image. So at last, at least they're doing something at last to compete with Flickr and Picasa. And
I'm not sure that the majority of people honestly care because they're mostly posting pictures of them drunk and making duck face.
I never do that.
But yeah, you don't, but you have sense. And that's not like 90% of the people on Facebook. So
my mates take pictures of me doing that and then post them. But I never do that.
You're like untag. I think it's good, especially for people who care. I'm just not surprised that it took this long because I'm willing to bet that the vast majority of people just don't care.
Well, that's probably true for Facebook, yes.
Yeah. I'm just going to say this is probably going to, you know, no doubt incense Ewan, but, you know, if people cared about taking high quality pictures, the iPhone wouldn't be the most popular camera in the world.
I agree with that.
That's true.
Holy crap, I agreed with Forsman. Now, I think the thing with this is it's there if you want it, which is nice. There's not, I mean, even Flickr, you know, a photo-oriented site doesn't have great viewing options particularly. You'd have thought there'd be more versatility than there is. But I wouldn't put a high-res image on Facebook anyway. I agree with Chris here. You know, most of this is handbag camera level stuff or cell phone level stuff, and it goes on at 2 by 2 inches on your browser, and that's it, you know, and that's all you want to see. It's an Instagram photo or nothing more than that, and it does a great job. So I don't see the point in this, to be honest, unless someone's posted something and you're looking in the background to see if there's something obscene or something that you really should be suing for.
Yes. Alex, any words?
Yeah, I can see a case of use. Yesterday or the day before, a friend of mine and I sort of build him websites and things because I'm a nice fella. He built furniture and things, and it's very high-end fitted furniture. And he did a load of stuff for some interior design companies. Now, they have a Facebook presence, and I didn't take the pictures, and he did, and they were awful. But they'd put them on their Facebook business page, and they just basically gave me permission to pull them off of their Facebook page and stick them on his website because it's his work, and everyone was happy. I mean, the pictures are awful, but, you know, that's what there was. If I had the ability to pull off higher resolution, slightly less awful pictures to use, then that would be handy as well. What I would say saying that is, if you're willing to share your pictures and you're wanting to share your pictures, being able to share them at a higher resolution via Facebook is a good idea. I mean, like you, both Ewan and Chris have said, no one's actually going to take advantage of it, but the fact that it is there, and for if you like a power user, which could be a business user, you could maybe stick up a leaflet, if you like, you know, could do a leaflet of advertising for your own work and say, you know, just pull off this picture and print it if you want this leaflet or this voucher or something. So it does give you the ability to be able to pull something off the print at a usable level. So it might not be photographic, it could be a voucher, but it does give the option. And for what I used it for the other day, it would have been handy. But again, most people won't know it's there and most people won't use it. But, you know, more power to them. Bigger is better in that case. So good for them.
Mm-hmm. The next story, Instagram, another popular app that I know Chris likes. Big Instagram here. They've opened up their API, or create an API, and the first people to take advantage of it is Hipstamatic, another big iPhone application, mm-hmm. which, again, you'll be able to take advantage of and tag your photos and put your special filters on so they all look artistic and then share them over Instagram and also to Facebook and other social media sites. Then that can take full advantage of your new high-quality image on Facebook as well. Are you welcoming this, Chris?
Yeah, I actually used to use Hipstamatic quite a bit, but then switched over to Instagram when I started using it because the sharing aspect of it is so nice. I mean, I just hit a couple buttons and hit send, and it goes to Facebook and Twitter and on the Instagram service as well. So it's really nice because you basically have all the same features and you can still put it to Instagram, but you can use Hipstamatic, which, and I don't know if you've played with it or not, but it sort of uses this paradigm where you have like this camera, you can change the lenses and you change the film and you can actually add these flash units that and they all give slightly different effects to your pictures. So it gives you more flexibility than Instagram. Instagram has like a dozen, maybe 15 different options, and you pick one and that's it. There's no tweaking involved. You can't make the effect, you know, more or less apparent or anything. With Hipstamatic, you can kind of, you know, play around more with how the effects look and what the end result is. And you can also kind of save your favorite combinations of like lens and film to switch to quickly. So I just like the versatility of it. And admittedly, it's sort of cheesy, but it has like this really cool UI where it looks like you're using an old, you know, Kodak Instamatic type camera. So it's, I guess, just like Instagram, it's just fun. It's just fun to play around.
So Ewan, does Hipstamatic and Instagram fill you with dread?
I have to say, until this afternoon, I thought Hipstamatic was a mobility aid endorsed by Thora Heard. So I'm afraid that I haven't got a lot to add to what Chris has just said. I'm surprised you managed to talk for that long on the subject. Very good, mate. Very good. Thank you. You can bull with the best of them.
Thanks.
Alex, any views?
I'm still using Histogram. Chris, have you ever actually tried to take a wedding purely on your iPhone using Instagram?
Most of the local photographers around here seem to.
I did shoot a wedding, not professionally, but I was the date of one of the bridesmaids, and I shot the entire wedding using my iPhone 3G, which takes terrible low light pictures, and they're only 2 megapixels. And then I put them all in iPhoto and edited them down and made little booklets. You know, you can make these different kind of size booklets, and I made these little pocket ones. And everyone in the wedding loved him.
But you're not dating the girl anymore.
Well, no.
Everyone but your girlfriend liked them.
We weren't boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. So
he's not giving a lot away there, is he?
No.
Very cagey.
Wife's listening, obviously.
Carl Zeiss has introduced some new lenses coming out in May. Set to launch a 15mm f2.8 super wide angle lens for both the Canon and Nikon DSLRs. It's going to retail for €2,148, excluding that. It's got a whole load of specs there, which I'm not sure I can read out because it will take too long. But does this lens interest anyone?
I've got a problem with the idea of super wide being 15 millimeters, because if you're sticking that on the camera with cop factor, then that's going to be 20 millimeters, and that really isn't super wide. That's kind of about as wide angle as you get with a basic compact that you buy, you know, like a Lumix, Panasonic Lumix, there you go, something like that. That's 24 mil. So,
Standard Nikon start at 18 anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't describe this as super wide anyway. If you're talking about, you know, down to fisheye and stuff, and 10 to 12 millimeters, as I'd said, 12 millimeters would have been a first entry wide angle. But it's a lot of money as well for what it's providing. I know it's 2.8, but depth of field doesn't matter that much when you're talking about the wide angle stuff. It doesn't have as big an effect, because you're looking at centering your subject anyway, or using interest on the periphery, as we talked about the other week. So I don't see the cost benefit that there is here with the payoff on the f-stop. So I wouldn't buy it. I don't think it's got anything that I would use it for socially, professionally, or family portrait-y. I think they're going to struggle to find a market for this, to be honest. There you go.
Alex?
Yeah. What's that? It's in English. It's £2,000 plus VAT.
Yeah, approximately.
Yeah, about that.
I could get something for £400 plus VAT that would do the same job.
You look at the Sigma. What? I mean, the,
yeah, know. But not that I'd want to do the job. And you've got to remember, a 2.8 on a 15 mil is going to be pretty much out of focus anyway, apart from the very centre of it.
Mm.
It does sort of... maybe I'm wrong, and someone can write in and tell me I'm a moron, but it's completely bloody pointless.
You are a moron.
There you go. I said it.
Oh, there, I said it.
And Chris agrees.
Come on then, Chris. Tell us why we're morons.
Oh, no. There's not any particular reason.
I think
it's a whole host of...
The thing to look at with the focal length.
I don't think what he's saying is wrong. I just felt like calling him a moron.
Oh, that's all right. As long as we're still friends at the end of it.
Just wanted to be agreeable, that's all. I think there's going to be a market for it just because it says Carl Zeiss on it. I mean, it's probably going to be... I mean, they've released several other lenses that are compatible with Canon and Nikon DSLRs. I'm pretty sure that they're manual focus. So, I mean, it's a limited market anyway. And I think, you know, I think Zeiss has a pretty clear idea of, you know, how many dozens of these are going to sell in the first place before even making them. So
everyone who goes into a shop and buys one of these, they'll go out with the camera tech having put a sign on their back saying, kick me.
Yeah, but I imagine most of these are going to end up on the back of a D4 or D1X or whatever it's called, basically owned by people that just have the money to buy an expensive camera and no need to own one.
Well, and what I'm wondering, I mean, doesn't Nikon make a 14 f/2.8?
Of course they do. And yeah, it doesn't cost anything like that.
£400.
Yeah.
So.
Everyone sees f/2.8 and goes, ooh, f/2.8. But you've got
if
to understand.
If it was 1.4.
Yeah, f1.8, f2.8, f1.4 at 50 millimeters to 100 millimeters, or even just a bit beyond that,
could you imagine,
gives you versatility.
It a 15 1.4 would be, though. I mean, that would be enormous.
A 15 millimeter what?
A 15 millimeter 1.4 aperture lens would be enormous.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is the you're not getting any real benefit from this. F2.8 from sort of 50 millimeters up to 200 millimeters gives you benefit of depth of field. This thing won't. As Alex said, to actually get the depth across the person that you're looking at, you're going to be probably at f4 to f5.6 anyway. So it what you'll get will look crap.
You'd have to be basically, if you were doing a portrait, you'd have to stick it up their nostril in the first place to be able to get the rest of them in.
But why are you using it as a portrait lens?
Because I can't think of any other decent reason for using a 15mm 2.8.
That's the point.
Focusing?
Yeah.
Focusing a little light?
On what? No, that's the point. Why would you want 2.8 to shoot anything that's more than sort of 4 foot away from you?
It's like using 2.8 to do a landscape.
It's pointless. I'm with Alex. Where were you when Kennedy was shot and you and Rankin agreed with Forsman and Fox on the same day?
This is unprecedented. So you can tell the world's going to end this year. It's all going,
exactly.
It's all coming to
hell in a handcart. Moving on.
Moving on. So after our discussion last week about Wi-Fi and cameras, Samsung have a leaked picture, of the Samsung NX20 has been put out there, and apparently it's going to contain Wi-Fi.
Bizarre.
So there you go. I can see into the future, apparently. Mind you, it wasn't that hard, was it? Just trying to find the spec now. I've lost my bet with the spec. So it's a 20.3 megapixel APS-C CMOS sensor.
What did you say, 20?
20.3 on this thing I'm reading. Yes. It's said to boast sensitivity support from ISO 100 to 12,800, along with its iFunction 2 lens support. And it's meant to be slightly bigger than the NX10, I think it is. It's also got a 3-inch VGA AMOLED display and is capable of shooting 4 HD 1080p and continuous shooting at 8 frames per second. But like I say, the biggest part of this is Wi-Fi connectivity.
Hooray!
Hey, about time. Anyone impressed by that? Not by my presentation of it, by the camera itself, I mean.
Well, I think we've agreed in recent weeks that, you know, this is the direction that cameras have got to go, particularly the compact range. The fact you've got an SLR going into this, good. But I'm just dubious about what it's going to do with that Wi-Fi. If it's just going to send it back to a repository for a disk, then that's not what I'm talking about. You want something that's internet connected, not just Wi-Fi connected. If it's storage only, then they've missed the mark. They've really missed the mark with it.
It does say you can ping images and video directly to the webby first it's got here, to the likes of Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter without having to deal with audio stuff in between.
Well, that's not Wi-Fi connectivity. That's software interaction with the net, and that doesn't mention anything about software interaction. And looking at the camera pictures that are there, there's not a lot of stuff on there for kind of navigation through a web interface of some description to get stuff up. And it doesn't look like there's apps on there to automatically upgrade. So I think this is probably a bit of bandwagon. Here's a Wi-Fi card, but that's it. I don't think they've actually got interaction with those applications at all. It just means that you can do it eventually.
Well, the thing is, one of the things about Wi-Fi, and this is something that we don't talk about, is that you can use Wi-Fi for a lot of things, and one of which is tethered shooting. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about using our iPads or whatever as a tethered screen. Well, if you've got Wi-Fi, then you can shoot, zoom, crop, focus, view. You can do absolutely everything that you could do on the back of the camera, but from a distance. And, you know, for me, that's really useful. And so we're thinking of Wi-Fi purely as being able to take something from the camera, but remembering Wi-Fi goes both ways. So, you know, it does make the actual connection of the camera so much more usable. I imagine you're going to have Samsung, you have a camera like that, then you're going to have an iPhone or iPad app that goes with it. Or if it's Samsung, it's probably going to be an Android app. But you could have an app on your phone that could interact very, very simply with upgradable software.
Which Samsung's already done on the NF100, the little compact.
Yeah, so this is just
got an Android interface.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what iFunction lens compatibility is, but if iFunction means that you can control the lens wirelessly and therefore, you know, do tethered shooting and various other... I mean, we talk about, oh, wow, it's got a 3-inch screen on the back so you can see what's going on. Well, how big's an iPad? You know, I don't know how big it is, but it's bigger than a 3-inch screen. So, you know, the usability, the connectivity, which is what I like to think of Wi-Fi as, rather than, you know, being able to go straight to the internet, let's think of it as a two-way connection path, which will enable very, very cheap, in comparison, connection to a fairly high-end camera. I mean, 20.3 megapixel maybe would annoy Chris, but the functionality and the usability of this camera is far better than a pocket camera. So they're just bringing what we have said for years, they're just bringing it to a wider gamut of photographers.
Chris, anything? Any opinion, sorry?
Well, I mean, this doesn't really change my opinion. I think that this is definitely a direction cameras are going to need to go in to compete with smartphones. And like Ewan said, you know, there's nothing saying that this camera will definitely have any direct uploading to YouTube or Flickr or whatever. But, you know, cameras are going to need that. I mean, at some point they're going to have to get their act together, and it's not an unsolvable problem. It's not even a difficult problem. In fact, thinking about it, you know, you have to wonder why there are some cameras that already have Wi-Fi built in. You know, how come they don't already have this capability? I mean, essentially all you need is they already have processors built in that are handling all the camera functions, that are handling all the UI and the menus and all that stuff. That's all the pieces they need, and all they need is just some software to take your username and password and send the data to the service using an API. So it's not some difficult problem, and why it hasn't been solved yet, I don't know. Mm. But it's coming, and you know, I think I'm surprised that it's taken this long.
Well, I gotta say, my iPhone spoiled me. I want everything connected to Wi-Fi now, mm-hmm. wherever I go.
It's the benchmark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, so moving on to this week's six things. What six things? In honor of our photo walk tomorrow, I thought this week's topic would be street photography. So I want to ask you guys, which six things or six techniques would you use to get the best from street photography?
Squeaky toy.
F8 and be there.
Yeah, don't be late and be there.
Yes, don't be late.
Beer.
Okay, we'll put
street
that one
photography
aside.
You get so much better with beer.
Is that because you don't care? You lose your inhibition?
Yeah, no. See, the thing is, when you start off, before you've had your first beer, you're shooting in manual. But then by the time you've hit six beers, that's what the program settings for on your camera. And in the meantime, you've gone... Yeah, you've gone through the aperture priority, and you've gone through the shutter priority settings as you've slowly got more drunk until you hit the P. And when you hit the P, you know that's P for pissed. Not professional.
Are we changing that now, are we?
Yeah, it will be tomorrow. I'll be shooting on the P from about 4 o'clock onwards.
Right. Fill-in flash is always quite handy on street photography.
Sorry.
I mean, one of the things with fill-in flash or usefulness is, all right, tomorrow you're going to be in Camden, should be a lovely day. You're going to get various sources of light with various sources of shadow. Nothing's controllable in street photography, apart from you might have a lovely shot set up and then some big bugger walks behind you, or someone driving a big van comes behind you and blocks off the light. So you do need a flash. If you want to do it properly, you need a flash, even if it's just a fill-in, because for some shots you're going to have to take directly into the sun. You need to compensate somehow. So there you go, a flash for fill-in flash. That's my first serious comment.
Yes, well done.
Sorry.
F8 either was serious.
Carl Swagger in the chat room is putting underwear, and he spelt it WARE, and I'm thinking that's like Tupperware, but for what I can't work out. Chat room, help us out there.
I was going to talk about lenses for a second. I think there's two ways probably that most people would go with this. Use something like a Tamron, like 20 to 200 equivalent, whatever they have, like the 18 to 250 or whatever it is they have for digital cameras. They have, you know, basically all the focal lengths of one lens. That might be the thing that some people might do. But I would encourage considering something like, you know, a bright single focal length 35 millimeter, maybe even a 50 millimeter. But pick a nice, bright, single focal length lens. And just stick with it the whole time and just make it work.
I'd agree with that.
And that I think it kind of helps you too. Like you're narrowing down your options, so there's less things to mess about with. But it also kind of forces you to like think even before you bring the camera up to your eye. You have to think about, this is the lens I have, this is the view I have, you know, is this point of view where I'm at even worth, or do I need to walk somewhere else? you know, it just kind of forces you to think a little bit different while you're visualizing. And I think it's a good exercise, and a photo walk is a perfect time to do those kind of exercises. So you have that, you know, that visualization technique. So you kind of build them up in your brain to use elsewhere.
Correct. You could always get a Carl Zeiss 15mm 2.8 super wide zoom lens for about $2,000.
Not till May.
I think it's a good point then what Chris has just said, because I mean one of the things that's constantly the difference between pros and amateurs is the use of zoom lenses. And the use of zoom lenses is very much about I want to sit in one place and have versatility to capture a different view from that single place. That's what a zoom lens is for. You go to a kid's party, you know, it's all very well walking around, but when you sort of go around and take the pose picture, you don't get that natural expression. So it's good to perch yourself off to one side and just sit with a you know, 70-200mm 2.8, and you get some cracking shots just zooming around, and people won't know that you're doing it. With a photo walk, you know, you should be going with a fixed lens. And I think 50mm is a good example of where to sit with it, because generally speaking, your field of view naturally will predominantly focus at roughly around 50mm. So there's a bit more of what you see is what you get with shooting with that kind of lens. So
yeah, again, I mean, 50mm is a good idea, but like we're going to a close-in marketplace, so you know, a short lens, something, you know, 50 would be good. Yeah, I agree. But you're in a narrow area, so I think a close-ish lens would help to bring out the actual feeling of the closed-in space that you're in. You know, you got a zoom lens, then, as Ewan says, you don't get that same feeling. I mean, you can be 100 foot back and zoom in as if you're in a narrow space, but actually physically having to work within that narrow space, and we're all agreeing far too much, but to physically have to work within that narrow space is going to give the true impression of the place where you are. And that's going to help you to give, you're going to feel the picture. You're going to look for the picture a lot better because it's actually going to be what's in front of you rather than what you think you're going to try and create. Mm. It'll be a more truthful image.
We should have a fixed focal photo walk. So you can pick a focal length, but every shot you take that day has got to be on that focal length.
That's a lot of Fs.
That would be good.
I was just going to add to that I used to have, years ago, I was a super huge Pentax user, and I had an Emmy Super, and the original 40mm f2.8 pancake lens. And that combination could almost be a pocket camera. You know, you could put it in a coat pocket easy. And I remember it was before I lived here in Chicago, and I was walking around downtown just taking some pictures. And one of my favorite pictures that I've ever taken of some of the metro trains lined up downtown. And it was that lens snapped on some black and white film. I developed it myself, made the prints myself, and to this day, and this is, I mean, years ago, like 1997, 98, maybe, when I took this picture, and it's still to this day one of my favorite pictures I've ever taken. And it was just that, you know, I had that camera and that lens, and that was it, and I was just making it work.
Good. Well, I plan to use Instagram tomorrow, so that'll be my tip.
Jolly good.
Yeah.
I think you might be pleasantly surprised, I'm going to be honest.
Well, that's the hope. Speaking of tomorrow's photo walk, just in case anyone in the chat room wants to come and they haven't signed up for yet, because it'll be too late probably when the podcast goes out, we're going to meet up at 12:30 at the World's End Pub in Camden High Street. And then we got a tour around. I think we've got Paul Cockell coming. He's going to be our tour guide. And we're going to go all over the place taking lots of shots. I think we've got about 12 people signed up so far. I'm not sure, but
there's definitely more than that coming. I just haven't got a ticket yet through.
That's true. Yes,
right. But there's definitely more than that.
I'm going to try and shoot some video of the day as well and stitch that together. So all the people who can't be there will still be hopefully able to experience it after the fact. Okay, moving on to questions. Only one question this week, but we can go into it a bit in depth if we like. Hi, Carl. Not sure if the experts have covered this before, but being new to DSLR photography, I would like to be given the explanation of the following parameters and what they mean in layman's terms. We're going to go through them. There's six different fields here. I would also like to know how each parameter, what effect each parameter has on the others. Cheers, and that's from Steve. So he's listed aperture,
After, here, Steve, let us explain photography to you.
Yeah, well, we've got 10 minutes.
No, you've only got 5.
5 minutes. Aperture, ISO speed, shutter speed, focal length, depth of field, and f-stops.
Right, I'll do it. Aperture,
take one each.
Yeah, the aperture is the size of the hole that you're allowing the light to come through to the camera. So a small aperture, it doesn't make sense actually, because a small aperture is a bigger number. But so you start off with a number, typically 2.8, and that's going to be a really big hole, and it's going to get in loads of light. And then you can go down to, some of my lenses go down to 45, which is a tiny little pinhole at the end, and it lets in even less light. That I'll let the person that deals with depth of field cover the relevance to anything else. So that's aperture.
There you go.
So who's got to take ISO?
Forsman.
I can do ISO. ISO speed with a digital is an equivalent to standard photosensitivities that were used for film. So your ISO speed is usually starts at 100 typically. The values double. So there's 200, 400, 800, et cetera. And each one is twice as sensitive as the light, so 400 ISO setting is twice as sensitive as ISO 200. I did want to throw in here just a mention of f-stops, or just kind of a general mention of a stop here, because as Alex was explaining about the apertures, all these settings, your aperture, your ISO speed, and your shutter speed, they have a stop, like each. On older cameras, it was a mechanical, pin. It would snap into place as you turn the dial, and that was your stop. So, when we talk about ISO speeds and apertures and shutter speeds, sometimes we'll talk about the difference of exposure in one stop or half stop. And that's what we're talking about, is that difference in exposure, or that changes from the aperture or the ISO speed or the shutter speed.
Okay. And you would?
Shutter speed. Shutter speed is how long your ISO-related capture medium, whether it's a sensor or it's film, is actually exposed to the light that's coming through the aperture. So they're all interrelated. If you did voltage, current, resistance, and with Ohm's law, they're all interrelated, and you affect one, you affect the others. Well, that's the principle of photography, basically, around these three factors. Aperture, ISO, and shutter speed are all interrelated. You affect one, you naturally have to affect all of the others to keep the balance the same. Shutter speed with the original cameras was that you had a lens cap on and you went to the end and you pull the lens cap off and you went 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, you put it back on and that was it. That shutter has now become a blind in front of a film that opened and closed for a period of time and got faster and faster, so the photography got better and better as a result, and you got more mobile as a result. And then now what you've effectively got is shutter speed is a notional parameter, that it's when the sensor is switched on to receive and off again. And the faster you do it, the more stress you're putting on the capture medium to store the light that's coming through. So with Alex's aperture, if you've got it wide open, you're shoving lots of light in very, very quickly. If you've got a short shutter speed, then you're going to capture all of that light very, very quickly and then stop again. But what you're doing is blitzing the sensor with information that it's got very little time to gather. And that's why your image gets grainier and grainier. There you go.
Right, okay. Focal length. Length of, basically, it's the length in millimeters from the front of the lens to the back of the lens. And what that enables you to do is, if the longer the focal length, e.g. 400 millimeters, it's like you had in, I can't think of the word, is binoculars or whatever the thing is when you looked out on the ship.
Telescope.
The longer the focal length, the closer a faraway object will become. In general, a focal length doesn't affect the speed of capture. You don't have to worry about aperture, ISO, or shutter speed, in theory. On some of the cameras I use, the focal length does change because of the distance between the back of the lens and the capture field, which in my case is film, varies because I'm using a bellows camera. So if my focal length actually goes beyond a certain point, I actually have to double the length of time, the shutter speed, the length of time. But on those cameras, I tend to work at 4 seconds, and I do exactly what you did say. I put a cover over the lens and I take it off and count to four. If my focal length is long enough, I take it off and count to eight. But that's a very, very specific circumstance, which I imagine 99.9% of photographers would never, ever, ever have to deal with again. So that's focal length.
Depth of field, Chris?
Depth of field. So this is related to your aperture. Mm-hmm. And maybe like a quick kind of rundown. So people, you know, when I teach camera classes, so I always start off with that explanation of aperture, and you can make it larger and smaller, and you can control, you know, how much light comes in at once, and then the shutter speed, you know, you can make it longer or shorter, and that kind of controls, you know, for how long that light comes in to your film or your sensor in the case of digital. And they always ask, well, why would I, you know, and I usually show them, as Ewan was saying, like, you can adjust the aperture to make it larger, and then you make your shutter speed shorter. Or you can make your aperture smaller, and then you can make your shutters be longer, and you end up with the same amount of exposure. And then the first question is always, well, why would I pick that one instead of that one? And the basic thing is that the size of your aperture has an effect on your images, and the effect is what's called depth of field. So that is the distance.
And Comcast goes.
Hey,
I'll finish off your sentence. That is the distance within the focal plane of your picture, which remains sharp. So if you've stopped right down to, as I said, f45, if you were shooting something that was, if the depth of your picture was 10 foot, that f45, the front all the way through to the back would probably be pin sharp and in focus. If you opened it up to 2.8, the part that you focused on, if in this example was, say, the front would be sharp, but after you went more than 6 inches in depth into the picture, it would start progressively getting further and further out of focus. And you would do that if, for instance, you were taking a portrait of someone against the backdrop of other people, and you didn't want the other people to overpower the picture, you'd shoot them at the lowest f-stop you could, e.g. 1.4, 1.8 or 2.8, so the person you were focusing on was beautiful and sharp, and everything else in the background became the lovely blurred color field, and it didn't detract from the picture. So that's why you'd worry about the depth of field.
There you go.
Good, good. And finally, Ewan, f-stops?
F-stops is a term that's actually been vastly misused in photography for a long period of time. And as Christopher said, it was all about the stop. And you had a notch in a ring. So you'd see it would say F8, F16, F22, F32, F35 if you were lucky. And you twisted it and it would actually lock into place. There was a little spring would drop down and it would hold the lens at that F length, and the F length was the stop. That was it. But stops also gets used now because of the seesaw between aperture, ISO and shutter speed. So you'd bracket it two stops, and it's just basically saying it's two gradients down. You come down two stops, you have two down, you have two up on any of the factors of aperture, ISO or shutter speed. It doesn't really matter anymore about what an f-stop is particularly. Just if you talk about stops, you're talking about graduations of change along a scale, nothing more anymore. And there Chris is back.
Yes.
Hi.
We finished you off though, mate.
I heard that.
And before, just one quick last point before we go in, there's going to be people write in and tell us that what we've done is oversimplified or made it into a general statement that's not technically correct. I'm sorry, that's what the question said. So please don't write in with a long-winded explanation that would bore the crap out of anyone that we wrote it to, all right?
I think the word layman's in the question precluded our answer.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network would not be possible without our friends at UK2.net. They suck up all our bandwidth demands and they keep us on the air. And we're going to have more shows on the network soon as well, come April. So hopefully they'll be nice to us and still let us carry on, please. You can use their services. You get 15% off anything you buy from their catalogue if you use the coupon code BAGELTECH. And if you use BagelTech DNS, they'll waive the DNS transfer costs if you want to transfer a domain in. They've got lots of services on their network. And as I always say, my personal favorite is still the site builder. You can have a little play of it before you commit to buy. You can knock up your own website in minutes and add your own photos and show them off proudly to the world.
There's a competition on Site Builder at the moment as well. If you vote on your favorite Site Builder site with UK2, you go into a draw for a brand new iPad 2. So worth going and throwing some abuse.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Carl, write one so we can abuse you.
Okay, thanks for that. we've also got our Bagel Tech Flickr group still going on at www.flickr.com/groups/BagelTechPhoto. Hopefully from the photo walk tomorrow, we're going to have some shots going up soon. But come and join the group and post your stuff as well. One final thing. I think Ewan's announced the Bagel Tech, the British Tech Bash now, come summer.
Mm.
That correct, sir?
Yeah, 6th of July. If you want a ticket, go to Eventbrite, and we're on there as well. British Tech News /eventbrite.co.uk, and you can buy a ticket. We're going to charge you £20, and it's going to be £21.85 that comes out of your bank account because Eventbrite take a fee. But when you turn up with your ticket, you get a crisp £20 back in your hands. It's just to make sure that people show and just to make sure that we get numbers right this year, because I think we're probably going to have an awful lot more than last year, and I'm not sure my ass is going to cope with the volume. So we need to find a venue, and we need to know how many people are coming to get the right venue. So there you go.
Good fun. We do all the shows on the day from the location.
Everyone will be there. And we might have a really special guest coming. We just need to sort out a few logistics, but.
Absolutely. So, guys, Chris, where can we get you?
Well, if you really want to get me, I'm on ArsTechnica.com, where I'm a contributing writer, and I write about, sometimes about photography when I get a chance, mostly about Apple, sometimes other tech policy and other crazy things. So rstechnica.com is a good place to find me. And on Twitter, I am usually on all the time because I use it on my iPhone, which is always on me. And there, I'm at ForzMag.
Very good. And Ewan, where can we get hold of you, sir?
You can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin or at British Tech News. And I'm also available for commercial photography work if you go to ewanrankin.co.uk. And you could be the first person to ever buy me via an internet connection if you go there.
Oh, yes. And Alex, where can we get hold of you?
You can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for any work that Ewan can't do. And Alex G. Fox on Twitter at any other occasion.
My name's Carl Madden. If you want to get hold of me, I'm Claw0101 on Twitter. And just quickly, guys, one word reviews. What do you think of your new iPads?
8 out of 10.
Rubbish.
8 out of 10. Amazing. 8 out of 10. Battery.
No,
battery's not up to snuff yet, but we'll see.
Oh, I
like
awesome.
Kyle's. I like Kyle's. It was very nice.
This is true. Thanks for joining us, guys. Until next time, happy snapping. Stay safe. See you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.